good morning, everybody. Hey, those baptisms are awesome. I absolutely love being a part of a church where that happens. We've actually sort of semi-planned to have at least baptisms every month. Now, I don't know that there's that many of you out there right now who are looking to get baptized, but we're just going to believe that God's going to do some cool things here. So we're going to schedule it, and if you're thinking, I'd like to get baptized one of these days, let us know. We'll keep putting the dates out there. We want to plug you in because that's the good stuff right there. That's really, really powerful stuff. This morning, just to get us started thinking together, I want you to think about, just for a second, who is the most famous person that knows you? The most famous person that knows you. Like if they were to walk in here, they would say, oh, hey, and they would know your name, shake your hand, whatever. Who is the most famous person that knows you? Got it? All right, what I'd like you to do is big time yourself now, name drop a little bit. Tell the person next to you who the most famous person is that knows you. Ready? Talk amongst yourselves. Go for it. All right, I didn't give you much time. So, just by show of hands, how many of you said nobody? I can't think of anybody famous. Okay, a handful of you. How many said Brantley Vossler is the most famous person that I know? Anyone? Just me? Just me? Your wife did? All right. All right, fantastic. You know, at the last church where Brantley and I were part of, we're a little bit closer to the Detroit area. So it was not uncommon for us to have professional athletes come to the church. It was a church, a large-ish church, a little bit bigger than this one. And so they could kind of come and blend in a little bit. And it was always fun when you saw them, and it was even more fun when they knew who you were. We had a former Detroit Lion who was the fullback. He actually, while he was playing for the Lions, he was there. And he would sit in the pews, and we would just sit behind him, and we'd try to guess the circumference of his neck because he was just, it was just like, oof, it was just massive. And a former Detroit Piston taught or was one of the like assistant coach, so we'd see him around. We'd say what's up to him. And then there was a goalie for the Red Wings that was there for a couple years. And then there was a former Detroit Tiger pitcher who was there, and he was a pitcher during the golden age of Tigers baseball, which was in the 80s. For some of you, like I don't, you know, that was way before my time. But for some of us, that we remember the 80s of Detroit Tigers, and he was an elder there. And I got to know him pretty well, and you know, first name basis kind of thing. We'd go out to lunch sometime, and when we would go out, I'd always be thinking, like, everybody's looking at us. They're like, we know who he is, and then he's with this other guy, you know, and I'm like the other guy. And I was all about that. There's something about being known. I'd tell my father-in-law that we had lunch, me and this pitcher, and he'd be like, oh, that's just, he like couldn't believe it. He couldn't believe that was real. Because we make much out of these kinds of people, right? I mean, if there's people in our lives that are famous, or well, I mean, seriously, if you're just sitting there today, and we had this whole, like, share with the person next to you. And someone turns to you, and they're like, yes, yeah, Selena Gomez and I are besties. We were texting before a kidney transplant. I sent her some scripture. You'd be like, you know, or you know, Bill Gates, he's my uncle. I mean, we would be like, we would think differently, right? You'd think differently of the person because of this connection to this big timer. We make much of these kinds of people. We make a big deal out of it. We are in our final week of our transition series, and we've been talking a bit about how life goes through these moments of transition, these changes, some of which you can predict. You know when the school year is going to start. Some of us, we plan for our retirement, you know, things like that where you can see it coming. You know, baby, you're pregnant, you go, okay, I know that the major transition is going to take place for us. But some of the transitions we face, we cannot predict. You know, the we have a talk moments where all of a sudden you're like, whoa, I didn't see that coming, and you know something's about to change. Or the appointment at the doctor's office, and all of a sudden, it takes a different tone. You know, there's some times where these things happen to us, and we want to make sure that we're faithful, that we're tracking with where Jesus has us, but the truth is that those moments of change and transition, they can bring tremendous, tremendous stress. And here's the truth about the passage today. I used to read this passage today and understand this to actually add to the stress. Because not only was I already stressed out about the changes that were happening, then I was like, and I got to please Jesus on top of this. It was like one more layer of stress in the whole thing. I've got to like make good decisions and be faithful, and I have to do all of this somehow for Jesus. It actually made it worse. But as I came to understand this passage, it began to give me tremendous, tremendous freedom and joy, even when transitions are coming. So today we're going to keep asking ourselves that question. What does it mean to be faithful, especially when transitions happen? We're going to be in Matthew 25 today. You can turn on your device to get there or grab the Bible in front of you. If you grab this one in front of you, in the seat in front of you, it's page 831, Matthew 25, 31 to 46. To set the stage a little bit right here, this is like the last kind of, I don't want to say teaching of Jesus, because he gives other teachings in the upper room, but he initiated his preaching ministry at the Sermon on the Mount, where he was talking about the kingdom. You've heard it said this way, but I tell you this. And he kind of flipped everything on his head, that there's this kingdom, my kingdom, that functions differently than everything else does in the world. And so that starts in the early chapters of Matthew, and then this is kind of the concluding of his kingdom lessons, if you will. Now, the disciples, when they were hearing this lesson, they didn't realize that the cross was coming. They didn't see the trajectory, even though he'd warned them and he told them. They didn't know that that was about to happen. But Jesus did. And it's almost like he realizes the time is running short with them and everything becomes a teachable moment. They see the temple. He starts teaching about the temple. They're walking. There's a fig tree. I mean, really, there's a fig tree. He starts giving them a lesson about a fig tree. And then he starts talking about sheep and goats, which we'll get into. And I mean, there's part of me, I don't know, but I'm guessing he's walking past a field and he sees flocks, herds, whatever. He sees them out there and he's like, oh, perfect time for this lesson. And he gives them this last kind of kingdom lesson. And I'm going to give us a phrase this morning. I'm going to pick apart the phrase, but the phrase is this: Jesus makes much of little. Jesus makes much. We make much of much. Jesus makes much of little. And this is what he taught. When the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the angels with him, then he will sit on his glorious throne. Before him will be gathered all the nations, and he will separate people one from another, as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. Jesus makes much of the little. Jesus is the first word in that phrase. And when Jesus talks, he's always reminding people, listen, listen, listen. Everything is about me. It's all about me. I mean, if I were to say that, or you were to say that, that'd be really arrogant. But when he says it, it's the truth. And Jesus says, everything in this world boils down to me. I am the one who's going to judge. Someday I'm going to come in glory with angels with me, and I will be the king, and I will judge. I am the one who says, you know, pass or fail, life or death. Like, I am the way. It's me. I mean, imagine you arrive at your class for the first day, and the professor gets up there, and she gives you the syllabus, and she's like, all right, here it is, pass fail class. Here's how you pass my class. You need to have perfect attendance. Some of us are like, and fail, right? We're out. But perfect attendance. You need to have perfect participation, which means every question I ask, you better be like, ooh, 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 you better be that kid. After class, you better come up. Before class, you ought to come up. I mean, you probably email me. You got to have perfect participation, like 110% kind of perfect. Every paper you turn in has to be perfect. The midterms, better be perfect. Final, perfect. Everything's got to be perfect. And if it's all perfect, I will say, okay, you pass. Now listen, if that were the scenario, you're like, and I'm dropping that class, right? But if that were the scenario, it's required class. It would not matter if your friends back in the dorm were like, I think you're really smart. It doesn't matter what they think. Or if your mother is really charmed by you and thinks you're just about perfect, that doesn't matter, does it? It only matters what that professor says. And Jesus goes, listen, I am going to come and come with the judgment. I give the final grades. I am the one who is going to do it. It's not Moses. It's not Muhammad. It's not CEO. It's not your ancestors. It's not your popular friends. None of that's going to matter. What's going to matter is me, because I'm going to come in glory with angels.
and all of the nations are going to gather before me. He's taking them up to 30,000 feet. You know what happens sometimes when stress, change, transition happens? We get super tunnel vision, don't we? All we can see is right here. And sometimes we're like, well, that's wonderful. You're wonderfully present. Yes, you get very, very present when bad things happen. But, you know, sometimes it's terrible to be very, very present, isn't it? Like, you want to be able to think a little. You want to be able to, like, step back from that thing and get a better view. Jesus knows that their lives are about to be completely unraveled by the cross. And he's trying to take them up higher and give them a 30,000-foot view. Listen, I'm giving you the big picture here. Here's what's going to happen. It's going to start and end with me. All the nations gather before Jesus. And he divides them up into sheep and goats. Now, have you ever asked yourself, why sheep and goats? Why sheep and goats? I mean, sheep and wolves, that makes sense, right? One eats you, the other, like, runs away. I mean, cats and dogs, maybe. Squirrels, fish. Maybe it's because he sees them in the field, but here's another reason why it might be. Sheep and goats are, well, they're kind of similar. And not only are they similar in a lot of ways, I mean, depending on kind of your background, we can all look at them and go, they look pretty similar, right? And masters, shepherds, farmers, they value both. But they're different. Goats tend to be a little headstrong, a little stubborn, a little do things their own way, whereas sheep are a little bit more leadable, they're a little bit more, well, helpless, they're not quite as bright, right? So Jesus sees these creatures maybe, and he says, someday I will separate you into the two categories. Now here's where this gets tricky. Because when I used to read this, I used to be like, okay, so does that mean when I get there, because I'm not going to be like, oh, I have wool. It's not like I'm going to be a sheep, right? So I'm going to be like, do I know my rights? And like my right or his right? Like, you know, is it going to be like that? And when you look at what it says here, this almost seems, well, opposite of the whole gospel story that we talk about all the time. So here's what it says. So he's going to gather, he's going to separate. He will place the sheep on his right, but the goats on his left. Then the king will say to those on his right, come, you who are blessed by my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you welcomed me. I was naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came to me. Then the righteous will answer him, saying, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you and thirsty and give you drink? And when did we see you a stranger and welcome you or naked and clothe you? And when did we see you sick or in prison and visit you? And the king will answer them, truly, I say to you, as you did it to one of the least of these my brothers, you did it to me. Then he will say to those on his left, depart from me, you cursed, into the eternal fire prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry and you gave me no food. I was thirsty and you gave me no drink. I was a stranger and you did not welcome me. Naked and you did not clothe me. Sick and in prison and you did not visit me. Then they also will answer saying, Lord, when did we see you hungry or thirsty or a stranger or naked or sick or in prison and did not minister to you? Then he will answer them saying, truly I tell or I say to you, as you did not do to one of the least of these, you did not do it to me. And these will go away into eternal punishment, and the righteous into eternal life. At first reading, this seems all wrong. It seems all wrong because it sounds like kind of what the world says is how you get. Here's how you get saved. It doesn't matter where you're from. All the nations, bravo. Okay, cool. Yeah, I'm with you so far. And it actually doesn't matter what you believe. All that really matters is that you can go down the checklist and say that you gave the homeless person your meal and you clothed a bunch of naked people, which I can't understand where you're hanging out if that's the case. But you fed somebody, you whatever. You visited somebody in prison. You did all of these good deeds. And at the end of days, the grand judgment of God, he's sitting there and he's looking around and he's going, you're pretty good. You did a lot of good things, you're saved. You guys, not so much, you're not saved. And for those of us who have been around the Bible a little bit longer, we're going, wait a second, that feels wrong. The whole thing is that you can't be good enough to be saved. Did you guys hear the stories? These are good enough type people, right? Most of us can't compare to that level of athleticism and intelligence and all that kind of stuff. And yet they came to a spot where they're like, I'm not good enough on my own. There's this gap that I can't bridge. I've used this illustration before and bear with me, it's a little corny, but imagine we're all at the edge of the Grand Canyon, and there's one among us who is like, I am the world's greatest pole vaulter. And we're like, wow, that's amazing. Now I have a famous person that I know. And they say, as the world's great, I'm better than you at pole vaulting. For most of us, it's like, okay, no argument. You know, like, I don't even know how to put. And they're like, and I'm going to demonstrate how awesome I am at pole vaulting for all of you to see. And we're like, what's going on? And the person backs up, clear the way, and they begin to sprint. And they sprint towards the edge, and they put it right in the nice little crevice, and the pole bends, and they fling themselves into the abyss. And as they do, you're thinking, well, they're right. They're way better than I am at pole vaulting, right? And yet they're a fool, because you're not going to make it. And we talk about this all the time, don't we? That you can, there's this distance between us and God. By sin, we've broken this relationship. We've broken all these relationships. We've broken our relationship with the earth. We've broken everything. And the gap is so great between us and God that you'll never be good enough. You can be the greatest of all time, goat, and you won't be good enough to cross that gap to God. We need Christ to come and create a way for us. So what's he saying here? Jesus, the Jesus makes much of little, we get the Jesus part. But what I think he's saying is Jesus makes much of the little faith. He makes much of the little faith. Faith is the difference between the sheep and the goats. We're tempted to think it's what they do, but faith is the difference. Because here, notice this. Did you see? They were sheep and goats before he separated them. Did you see that? He walks and he's like, oh, there's the sheep, there's the goats. So let's do this, and moved him. There was something about them that was fundamentally different. There's even this little verse in there, which is kind of like this little hint, which helps us understand that that's what it's saying. He places them, the sheep on his right, the goats on his left. And then in verse 34, then the king will say to those on his right, come, you who are blessed by my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. What he's saying is, some of you have responded to my call in your life. That's why you're blessed by my Father. This takes us right back to the Sermon on the Mount. Some of you have recognized you are sheep. And before today, by my grace that I've poured out on you, you've responded. And you realize that without me, you're sunk in my presence. Come, sheep, come here. Sheep, come here. You already know that you need to be led by the shepherd. I'm making much out of your little faith. Jesus makes much out of our little faith. Many of you have been to kids' sporting events, concerts, whatever. A couple years ago, I had the great pleasure to sit through a fifth grade band concert, which, to be fair, is probably similar to the place where the goats have to go in this story, okay? And I did what I generally do in big crowds like that, which is sit in the back corner and think sarcastic thoughts and text somebody with my sarcastic ideas. So that's what I did. I'm a terrible audience participant or whatever. I'm just awful. So I was back there, and there's this couple from our church who wasn't apparently as smart as I was because they're sitting up front. So I was able to text, and they had like the glow on their face, you know. We're sending each other emojis and snarky comments and all this. And here's why it was so easy for me to be disengaged. Because the concert was like 2 hours, right? And most of the kids that were playing, I didn't care about. I mean, that sounds bad, right? I mean, they're all God's children, whatever. But let's be honest. I don't know those kids. I don't care about those kids. I mean, if a kid got up there that I like sort of know or is like one of my kid's friends, then I'm like, oh, okay, I'm going to dial in because I know this kid. And then when my kid got up there, all of a sudden, the warbled notes, the missed notes, all of the mess, I didn't care about. All of a sudden, I'm like, oh, there he is. All right, this is cool. What's the difference? The musical ability? No. 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 That wasn't it. He's my kid, right? So I interpret the entire thing. They're acting the same. They look the same. But one is mine. Jesus makes much of little faith. Mustard seed faith. Childlike faith. He looks on the sheep, those of us who have just come to this point of like, I got nothing. And he goes, okay, good. I can make much of that kind of faith. Come on. You're blessed by my Father. You're about to receive this inheritance. If today you're kind of trying to figure this whole thing out and you're struggling because you feel like it's got to be this huge deal and I got to answer all these questions and all that, welcome. We're glad you have questions. We're happy to try to answer those questions. But it doesn't take a PhD in theology to step across the line of faith. It takes a willingness to be like, I'm a sheep. I'm trying to go my own way. It's not working. I know that I've messed up. I know that I've sinned. I know that there's distance between us and I need Jesus. Today, that could be you. The goats, they get surprised. Well, I'm a goat. I thought I was a pretty good person. Uh-uh. What was missing? Faith. Jesus makes much of little faith. Second, Jesus makes much of little people. I'm going to say little people with air quotes, podcasters, little people. There's no such thing as little people, right, I get it. But there's people in our lives we make much of. Oh, I know this famous person. And then there's people in our lives where we're like, they're forgettable. Jesus actually makes much of the people that the rest of us forget about. He identifies with them. The person who's hungry and was fed, he's like, yeah, when that person was hungry and you fed them, you were feeding me. The person that was thirsty, the person that was in prison, the refugee, whatever sort of vulnerable person you can come up with, Jesus identifies with them. Listen, when he says, when I was this way, you did this, blah, 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 they're like, when did I ever see you, Jesus? You're a king. Anyway, kings don't need like robes and food. You've got all the power you can buy. Trust me, Jesus. If I'd seen you struggling, Jesus, I would have responded. I'm not that dumb. I mean, if Jesus is out there and he needs something, you can have whatever I have, Jesus. But I never saw you. He's like, yeah, I was one of those people you don't pause to look at. I was one of those people that you don't care about. I was one of them. And the goats are totally surprised. Jesus says, when you did one of the least of these, you did it to me. So for all of us, I think this is a challenge for us to look, again, air quotes lower, to look lower, to look around and say, who's vulnerable in our spheres? To whom can I spend some time and energy and money and encouragement? Who's around me that might be hungry or thirsty? And I live in a pretty plush world. You know, I don't know many of that. But who around me is hurting? And I might be able to step into that. Because when I do, I'm stepping into ministering to Christ himself. Jesus makes much of little faith. He makes much of, again, air quotes, little people. And then thirdly, Jesus makes much of little faithfulness. Brantley and I were talking about this phrase yesterday. And when I say, outside of the context of this, Jesus makes much of little, what it sounds like is that Jesus makes mountains out of molehills. I mean, we already sort of think that way, right? Like, my sins aren't that big of a deal. Well, what's all this dying on a cross for my little sins, right? Like, so what? Jesus is just up there like, and check, another bad thing. And he makes a big deal out of all my little sins and my little problems. And that's kind of where our brains go immediately when you hear a phrase like that. But in this passage, it actually flips it around. Jesus makes much of our little faithfulness. Our little attempts to just overflow God's grace and love onto other people. Here's what's awesome about this. I always realized that the goats were surprised in this passage, right? Like, I've known that forever. They're like, oh, really? I thought it was a good person. I'm like, oh, that's gospel 101. You busted, you know? But what I missed was this. The sheep were surprised. Did you notice that? The sheep show up, and they're like, well, I know I followed the shepherd, but what good stuff did I do? When did I ever feed you, Jesus? I don't remember any of that. And Jesus is like, no, you did. You don't remember, you've forgotten, but I remember. And your little bit of faithfulness in that moment when it was like an interruption, the type of interruptions that normally drive you crazy, but you embraced it in that moment, that interruption, that person was me. I was there calling on you. I needed someone to come along and just be faithful and just respond to that need, and you did. Isn't that the best kind of surprise? You show up and Jesus is like, guess what? You're about this big and I did all this with you. Guess what? You don't even remember the stuff you did. It just came naturally out of you. Like wool comes out of a sheep, right? It's just part of your growth. I can make much of your little itty bits of faithfulness. I mean, that to me is tremendously encouraging and it makes me want to embrace interruptions. Especially in transition. Because I get so stressed out and just get out of my way. I'm trying to figure this thing out. And yet all those little people are maybe Christ in an opportunity to serve him. You know, the nurse who's also in the room when you're receiving the diagnosis that you'd never wanted to hear. That could be Christ. And the way you respond in that moment might be a powerful ministry to him. We could go down the list of how that could work. But Jesus makes much of little faith, little people, and little faithfulness. I want to take your brain to that heavenly courtroom just for a minute. Because I was listening to a pastor that did this. I thought, oh, that's so rich. But I want you to imagine we're all up there. And he starts doing the dividing thing. And he calls me forward. Tyson Charles Lemke, yes. Charles is my middle name, and it's awesome, all right? Tyson Charles Lemke, yes, sir. Do you remember May 12th, 2002? Give me a second, Jesus. I think I got it. What was it? Yeah, on that Sunday, I was asked to preach in big church, and that rarely happened. And when I did it, I had them, you know? They were, like, listening. It was awesome. And then what was great about it, because I'll never forget this, was after service, this guy came to me. He kind of looked around to make sure the real pastor wasn't around, and he said, you know, I know this is like one of your first sermons. He goes, you're already better than the senior pastor. And I was like, oh, no, stop. But inside, I was like, that's awesome, you know? I remember that, Jesus. Yeah, that was pretty good. And Jesus is like, yeah, it's all right. Do you know what kind of sermons I get to listen to? You know, like, I don't know, Charles Spurgeon, you know, a little bit cooler Charles. You know, Martin Luther King Jr., St. Paul, you know, I've heard some pretty good stuff. That's not really what I'm talking about. What are you talking about, Jesus? No, I'm talking, it was later that night. You got a phone call. You're pretty emotionally spent, like you'd ramped yourself up for that sermon, and one of your students called you, and they were brokenhearted over a stupid relationship, which honestly, I mean, you knew and I knew. It was no good, but whatever. And they were crying because they'd broken up, and they didn't know how they're going to face their friends at school. And part of you just want to be like, dude, seriously? Good riddance. But instead, you listened. And you just listened, and they cried a little bit, and by the end, you prayed with them, and you could tell that they'd calmed down a little. Do you remember that? A little. Well, that's okay. That student was me. And I remember. Do you remember October 21st, 2012? Oh, yeah, I do. I got asked to preach at this church, and it was huge. It was like thousands of people, four services. It was crazy. It was great, too. I felt like they were totally with me. And then afterwards, when we were at a restaurant, even like a week later, someone was like, Tim, don't I know you from somewhere? Then I was the famous person. It was so cool. And then my kids, they saw me on TV, like a screen bigger than that one out in the cafe. And they go, Dad, are you famous? We saw you on TV. And I was like, no, but it's kind of, yeah. You know, and I was like, is that what you're talking about, Jesus? And Jesus is like, I don't watch much TV. That's not what I mean. Well, what do you mean, Jesus? Well, after the third service, you're pretty wiped out, but one of my daughters, 63 years old, walked down the aisle, and she was hurting, okay? And she was hurting pretty bad, and she walked up to you, and she grabbed you by both hands and pulled you in close. You know how you love that? Yeah, Jesus, that makes me uncomfortable, you know? And he's like, yeah, and it was real close, and you just listened, and you just prayed with her. Do you remember that? I don't. Honestly, that's okay. I remember. That was you. That was you ministering to me. I remember. Well, do you remember August 4th, 2015, when you anonymously gave money to that couple? Do you remember when you hugged that couple because they were hurting? Do you remember when you received that phone call of the person who had liver cancer they just found out and they're looking for a miracle? You never met the person your whole life and you decided to call them back. Do you remember that? Do you remember when you wrote a note to that volunteer? Do you remember when you hugged them? No, that's okay. That was me. And I remember. See, I used to read this and it broke me because I'm like, I'm not doing enough. And now when I read this, I go, Jesus is doing everything. He's taking these little bits of faithfulness and he's turning it into something huge. He's making much out of even us. Listen, we serve a good God, amen? He's a God who can make much out of little mustard seed-sized faith. And he can make much of a bunch of people that the rest of us ignore. And he makes much of those moments when we overflow his grace and his mercy and his love, sometimes when we don't even remember. He remembers. And he says to us, come, you who are blessed by my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. Let's pray. Jesus, I thank you. I thank you for your ability to turn death into life and little into greatness. God, I thank you that you don't care if we know anyone famous. You care far more how we respond to those who the rest of the world seems to forget. God, I thank you that it's not a matter of our works, but it's a matter of your calling on our lives and our simple response to you. And Jesus, I thank you for this surprise that you remember even the things we forget. Father, for the person in here this morning who's like thinking, maybe I'm a goat, you know, maybe I'm still doing things my own way. I listen to those testimonies of the women getting baptized, and that's kind of me. I'm trying to control things, and I cannot control things, and I realize there's a distance. God, would you prompt them, even their hearts right now, to just pray, God, I'm done. I'm done going my own direction, trying to create my own kingdom, trying to atone for my own mistakes and failings and sins. I want to receive that kind of freedom that you offer. I want to be the type of person, God, where you have forgiven and you love me. You call me a son. You call me a daughter. And you remember even these things that I seem to forget. Father, for the person in here whose heart's getting tugged, would you prompt them to just fill out the orange card, tell the person that brought them, prompt them to come forward, because none of us want to be surprised like a goat, but it's going to be so awesome to be surprised like these sheep were. But how you took such little old us and you made much. Pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.